All right, thanks for joining me. This is April with Eyes for the Road. Today, I'm doing an episode on Conway, New Hampshire, which is in the White Mountains area. It's a great base for your fall foliage travels. So you can stay there and explore the area, do the Kank Highway, do the Conway Scenic Railroad, and other attractions to photograph and see and do. So for today, we're doing something a little different. I've gathered 3 phone interviews, so the quality is going to vary a bit. So please bear with me. We'll be speaking with Susan from the Conway Scenic Railroad and hear about that. We'll talk to Jeff Folage, also Jeff Folger. He'll give us an update on the fall colors and driving the Mount Washington Auto Road, which is quite an experience, especially in the fall. And then lastly, I want to introduce you to Joe, who's the new owner of the Isaac Merrill House Inn. It's right in Conway, great location, and he still has rooms available and has been recently renovated. So tune in, let's get started, and enjoy the podcast. Thanks. Today, I'm very pleased to get Susan Logan from Conway Scenic Railroad on the phone to tell us about the railroad, some of the different excursions you can take in the fall, and all about the trains. So thanks, Susan, for joining me, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks for calling, April. Glad to talk with you. As I was telling you earlier, Conway Scenic Railroad is celebrating its 43rd year this year as a tourist railroad. Our 1874 station is right in the middle of North Conway Village and is quite the iconic image for the village. It's widely photographed and seen all over the world. The tracks, the station, as I just said, was built in 1874. The tracks were laid in the 1870s, so we are a heritage, meaning historical, railroad. And we have 2 different trains and 3 different routes. We have 2 valley trains that all of our excursions leave from our station in North Conway Village. 2 of the excursions stay here in the valley and go in opposite directions. And the length of the excursions, the shortest one is 55 minutes. The longer one is 1 hour and 45 minutes. Then we have the notch train, which actually goes into and through the mountain.
Oh,
roughly,
wow.
roughly parallels Route 302. But the trestles up there were considered engineering marvels. They were considered to be impossible to build in the late 1870s. But they were, in fact, built and offer some of the most spectacular scenery in the Northeast for our passengers. And fall, obviously, that is our most popular train with adults, and fall, by far, is the most popular season. To take that excursion. Our notch train season, we started last week on June 13th, and we run through October 28th. So September and October are, we have sellout trains. We have trains right now that are already sold out for early October.
Columbus Day weekend, I know, is a big weekend in New England.
Yes. Columbus Day weekend is crazy busy, and I don't think any of my tourism friends would mind my saying, you know, plan around that weekend, because you're going to end up spending far too much time stuck in traffic. The waiting lines everywhere are ridiculous to get food, to get gas, to get anything. It really is. It also coincides with Freiburg Fair. Freiburg, Maine is right across the border from here, about 12 miles, and that fair attracts well over 100,000 people in a week.
Oh, my goodness.
So you've got the perfect storm for traffic issues that weekend.
So, oh, my goodness.
We offer dining on all 3 trains, lunch and dinner on our valley trains, and then lunch as part of the first-class notch train package on the notch train. That package includes first-class seating, and then the dining car offers 2 time options for lunch, either on the way up through the notch or on the way back to North Conway.
Now, the
people, not to interrupt, but the people on the train, the, you know, like the servers and the conductor, are they dressed, you'd say, a little bit in period attire for any of these excursions? Or
the train people are dressed, they have the conductor trainman hats, and they typically, we don't have too many full vintage uniforms, mm-hmm. but they are typically the train crew, and with one exception, they're all men. They do dress in white shirts and dark ties and dark pants and dark shoes. The servers on the dining car are dressed in black and white. So it's a first class experience, certainly the dining cars. And all of our cars, there are coach and first class seating options separate from the dining cars. On the Valley train, our first class, we have the first class dining car, and then we have the first class Gertrude Emma, which is a beautifully restored 1898 Pullman parlor observation car.
Which
has mahogany paneling, stained glass windows. Instead of the bench seats that people typically associate with train travel, there are individual wicker chairs that face out to the oversized windows. And it really gives people an appreciation for train travel in the late 19th century.
Yeah, I would think that would be wonderful, kind of like stepping back into time. And
absolutely, absolutely. It was when our railroad discovered it. It was a gem that had been painted all in Army barracks green, including the windows, and had been used as a bunk car for the crew on the railroad that owned it at that time, the track crew, which let's just suffice it to say that track crew people, for the most part, are not the most genteel.
Right.
And it's a wonder that the windows, they scraped everything off and just found this forged wood and stained glass work and molding.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's just an incredible car. Our website, conwayscenic.com, has all kinds of information as well as pictures, and we have a whole page dedicated to that car.
Oh, wonderful. And the steam, you have a steam locomotive, but I understand that's still being restored at this time?
Yes.
Is that correct?
It's our steam engine dates back to 1921, and it's undergoing a federally mandated 15-year overhaul, which means that for all intents and purposes, it literally has to be taken apart and be put back together again, which is incredibly time-consuming and expensive.
Oh,
we're trying to do all the work here in our own shop, and obviously at this time of the year when we're in full season, our shop crew are busy with other things. So it's a three-year process. I think we're in our last year. We hope to get it out again in 2018.
Oh, well, that's something to look forward to, too, if people can't make it out this week, this year.
It was the very first piece of equipment owned by Conway Scenic Railroad, and was the engine pulling the first revenue train as it departed the station in August of 1974. And it's very near and dear to the hearts of not only everybody who works here, but many of our fans, of whom are... Yeah, we're little kids and remember that steam engine, and now they're bringing their children or grandchildren here. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is an amazing engine. I do recall, I think, one of my visits with my parents, we timed it to come at the end of the afternoon when some of the trains are coming back into the station, just to see that the steam and the train. It's quite an experience.
It is, and to see the little kids' reactions, you may or may not know that steam engines used to be called the iron horse, iron horse.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to be when, it's belching the white steam, and it seems that it's a living, breathing.
Oh,
horse,
completely,
And the kids, and well, a lot of the adults, too, just stand as it comes into the station, literally with their mouths open, going, oh, my gosh,
is that
incredible.
Yeah, it really is. So tell us a little bit about some of your special weekends that you have, and I see you have a murder mystery train as well.
Yes, we just finished up our June murder mystery series, and it was a big success. It sold out. We've got two more weekends coming up at the end of October, the last two weekends of October. Those trains are starting to sell, and one of them, a couple of the dates are half sold already, but they'll sell out by the end of September, certainly. Those trains will be gone as far as an option for this year. But murder mystery is something we do every year. This year's theme is matrimony, mayhem, and murder, and brings a whole new meaning to forever hold your peace. People had a lot of fun with it, and we work with Arts in Motion, which is a local theatrical company. So the event includes the train ride, of course, a 3-hour, 4-course dinner, and a live theatrical performance. So it's pretty special for this part of the country.
Yeah, that's pretty unique. That sounds amazing.
And we get rave reviews. The culinary team of our restaurant partner, Adatash, in nearby Bartlett, they do a fantastic job. We just get just lots and lots of compliments, not only on the quality of the food, but on the presentation and the super friendly service. So we've got people that have worked on the dining cars since we've had dining cars. So they're, they love that. They love working at the railroad.
Yeah. So what's the Rail Fans weekend about? Can you tell us a little about that?
That's on Labor Day weekend. Saturday is, there, it's all various valley trains, mixed extras we put together. Not only have our regular passenger trains, but we have extra trains that go along different tracks than what our normal trains run on. We have special trains that we make up to look like a freight train, again with the railroad in general attracts a lot of rail fans who are also photographers. Mm-hmm. But they really come out in force on Rail Fans Weekend because there's just so much going on here that isn't typical of our operation. Saturday night, for example, we have a photo shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a night photo shoot.
Oh, that sounds amazing, actually.
Yeah, and it's free. We don't charge for it. We have a couple of local and people who used to be local but have now gone on with their lives and live in other parts of the country, but they're professional photographers who know the railroad well, and they come in and basically help. They organize the shoot and they help set specific shots up according to people's interests.
Right, so, and just to get the lighting right too at night is an art.
Exactly. Yes. So that's going on Saturday, and then Sunday. The Sunday's almost sold out at this point. We're doing our regular excursions in the valley, but we're doing an above the notch tour. A notch train typically ends at that time of the year at Crawford Station, which is the height of the land in Crawford Notch. Mm-hmm. This train on Sunday is going beyond Crawford Station, beyond Fabian Station, which is close to the Mount Washington Hotel. It's going on to the village of Whitefield. We have run excursions before to Hazen's, which is an intersection outside of Whitefield. But this train is actually going into the village of Whitefield, and it's going to be the first passenger train to get that mileage since I believe it was 1982.
Oh my goodness.
So it's really going to be a big deal. We have a number of individual cars are already sold out. And I know based on the inquiries we're getting daily, people who love trains are called rail fans.
Exactly.
And they go for this quote unquote rare mileage where, trains typically don't go because the line is out of service or for whatever reason. But so this train going to Whitefield Village is a very big deal in the rail fan community. We already have a couple of railroad clubs that have bought.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. The total car,
with 76 seats. They just said, we're going to buy the whole car because we know our members will we'll sell it to our members.
So. Right. People travel all across the United States just to see some of these historic trains because they keep, you know, there's fewer and fewer. So it is quite an opportunity.
Yeah.
Especially
and the fact
for
that
the...
And the fact that it's been 35 years since the last train was in that location is going to generate a lot of interest, too. And a lot of, they're going to allow time in Whitefield for photo opportunities.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty exciting in
that,
our world.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So
and then, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Then in October, we have, in addition to the Murder Mystery Dinner Train, those same weekends, we have our Pumpkin Patch Express, which is hugely popular with the little kids.
They're
they're encouraged to dress in costumes, and they travel to the pumpkin patch, where they get off the train, and all the children get to pick out their own pumpkins. And
I'd like to do that. That sounds fun.
So that runs from the last two, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays of the last two weekends in October. So, as you can imagine, those are really popular family events.
Oh, definitely. And those trains are about like an hour or so, you'd say, to go out and get
about an hour round trip. We allow maybe 15 or 20 minutes at the pumpkin patch. So I would say what is normally a 55-minute round-trip excursion is more like an hour and 15 minutes.
Well, Susan, it's been wonderful chatting with you. Why don't you shout out the website again and how people can get tickets to any of these events? If they have questions, I'm sure there's a phone number maybe that they can call.
Our website is conwayscenic.com, conwayscenic.com. And all our contact information is on there. They can call us for reservations for our regular trains or any of the events that we've talked about.
Fabulous. And they can also buy tickets right off the website as well, correct?
Correct. The only thing they can't buy tickets for off our website is Thomas. That event is ticketed through TicketWeb specifically, but they can call us for reservations.
Okay, great. And if people have further questions, there's a contact number then on the website.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Susan. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. And our photographers and travelers, if you haven't been out to Conway, it's most definitely an incredible destination any time of year. So again, thank you very much, Susan, for your time. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Hey, April, good talking with you.
Got Jeff Bulger back on. He's got incredible information. If you haven't visited his website at jeff-foliage.com, he's got foliage road trips. He's got photographs. He's got a bunch of information on there. But today I wanted to talk to him about driving up Mount Washington. It's something that I know my parents talked about doing, but I've actually never myself driven up the auto road. So I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, and he's going to give us his input on driving up, maybe some tips, that type of thing. All right. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. I did that a number of years ago. I haven't been back up there to the top since then. There's several things to keep in mind. One is temperature difference. It can be 60 or 70 degrees, even warmer, down at the foot of Mount Washington, and you can pretty much have frost up above.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, you definitely need to keep that in mind. Bring extra layers. It might be, very nice when you get up there, but generally, it was fairly warm when I started the trip. By the time we got up there, I was putting on a fleece windbreaker.
Oh my God.
it was comfortable. It was sunny, but it was still, probably in the 50 degree mark, at least 20 degrees cooler up on top of Mount Washington.
I see.
Let's see. The other items is you come up Route 16. As you get past Pinkham Notch, you'll come up to the parking lot for going into the auto road. Can't miss it. The signs are all there. They'll, you know, be happy to sell you a bumper sticker for having gone up the auto road. If you're timid about not having guardrails and things like that, you might want to think twice and maybe take the cog railway. Because there are no guardrails for the most part when you go up there. And when you get up there three quarters of the way up, you're basically looking out the side window at, Carter Mountain, Mount Abrams, or Adams, Mount Jefferson. You're looking at all the other mountains straight across.
Wow.
And there's just a view down. My wife was a wee bit on the nervous side. I was in a full-size truck. Once you get up there, you find a parking space, you walk around, visit the museum. Heading back down is another fun part. You're definitely going to be giving your brakes a good workout. Throw it in the second gear to use the engine to drag, you know, cause a little drag and not have to use the brakes quite so much. But if you know you need a brake job, don't go up the mountain.
Don't go up.
don't go up because the last thing you really want is, you know, a brake issue coming down. it wouldn't be fun.
Right.
But the views up there are incredible. You're basically looking down on the fall foliage because you're up at the level where there are no trees. And so you will, by the time you get halfway up the mountain, you've gone from the deciduous trees with fall colors into the evergreen location and then elevation. And then you'll get up to the point where there are no more trees. And it's just, you know, bare scrabble rock and the road that you're on.
Wow.
So it is, you're going to go through all these alpine zones from down below all the way up to the very top of the world, at least as far as New Hampshire is concerned.
Are there places to pull over as you're going up? Or
no,
pretty much?
I don't remember there being any place to really pull over. It's really, you know, one lane up, one lane down.
Okay. So as an alternative, you might suggest the cog railway or something?
Yeah, cog railway is a wonderful way to go. I haven't done it yet. I photographed it. You know, I've gone up the road to it. I think that's just past Jefferson Notch, which is another one of my favorites. You pass Jefferson Notch and, or actually, take that back. I think it's maybe Crawford Notch. But you pass up Crawford Notch and go up to the foot of the other side of Mount Washington. And that's where the cog railway is. And that looks to be one of those things that's on my bucket list of things to do. And one of these years, I'm going to get up there for the cog rail.
Yeah, that's like the auto road to me. But I do notice I went to the website for the auto road too, and they do have, I guess, a van you can ride up into. But again, if you're faint of heart, it sounds like it's
yes,
quite the toad ride. So.
That'd be one way to do it. I don't know if they had that when I did it. It was about 10 years ago. So they could have had it, but I don't remember. But,
yeah,
you know,
they may not have.
My truck didn't, you know, I didn't need new brakes afterwards. You know, we made it up, we made it down. We lived to tell the tale another day. And
got your bumper sticker.
Got my bumper sticker, yep. Yep.
How long did you think you spent making that turn off?
It probably took a good 40 minutes, maybe 30, mm-hmm. 40 minutes to get to the top. There wasn't a big long line of traffic or anything. You weren't bumper to bumper all the way up the mountain,
which would be preferable, I would think. I don't think I'd want to.
I think it would be, you know, pretty decent. And, I'm trying to think of, when I was up there. Let's see, it was.
Well, I know you mentioned it on your, you have a whole little blurb on Route 16, because it's off of Route 16. And you also mentioned how much you enjoy Route 16, which may be a nice...
Route 16, it never fails to please anybody. That is a wonderful drive at any time. And, you know, if you look at, you know, Route 16, Jackson is along it. Obviously, Conway's along it. You know, you've got two covered bridges in Conway. You've got a covered bridge in Jackson. Pinkham Notch, which has that big, massive turnout that you can get dozens and dozens of cars, and you can look up and down the notch between Mount Washington all the way back down towards Jackson.
Oh, wow.
And that, on a sunny day, is just a gorgeous view. And if you want, actually, another fun, high view of the fall colors would be maybe to go across the street from Mount Washington and go up on Wildcat Mountain, because they have gondola rides.
Oh,
they
nice.
Take you up in the, what they normally, have for the ski trips, and just go up and get a view out that way, which you don't have to worry about driving it up. It's a much, it's safer, but it is less.
Well, you're not as focused. Yeah, it's not as nerve-wracking. I would think you could just hold on like you would a ski lift and enjoy taking the view a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Because, when you're going up, it's kind of hard to rubberneck when you're going up Mount Washington, because you have to remember, I got to stay on the road.
Yeah.
at least with going up in a gondola ride, it's you can rubberneck and look out the window all you want, and you don't have to worry about things.
That's great. So have you done the gondola ride, it sounds like?
I did it over on Cannon Mountain. Cannon Mountain has one as well. Most of the ski areas. And if you go over to Vermont, to Smuggler's Notch, they do it. Most decent-sized to big mountains. Loon Mountain has one.
Oh, nice.
Loon Mountain's got a bunch of neat things up on top of it. It's got a bunch of caves that you can go exploring and crawl through. And the kids, I took my grandkids up there, and they really seem to enjoy it.
So in wrapping up, any thoughts on how we're progressing? No updates yet. I don't remember exactly what you spoke of in June. So
it's still early yet. Right now, I would say that unless I get further indications of any tar spot or any other leaf issues, I don't see any evidence, no real evidence of it yet. We're bound to have a little bit, but there's a few outbreaks here and there of gypsy moth, but not like it was last year.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
So it doesn't seem to be as progressing like it was last year. We don't have a drought like we did last year. Several places that were in extreme drought last year, both in New Hampshire or Vermont or Massachusetts, have gone down into acceptable levels again. So we've made up a lot of deficit. And that means that the leaves are going to be fairly happy. As it sits right now, we're going to have happy leaves. Happy leaves mean that they stay on the tree longer, even in higher winds and rain. And but they're also sometimes a little slower to start, and they last longer, so they're slower to end. So right now I'm leaning towards what I call a slow burn. It won't be, igniting real fast,
right,
but they're just going to start and they'll stay there, and they're not, they're going to give us more time in the more northern areas, barring, major storms and things like that.
Right.
But, we should see a long running, fall foliage season this fall. Once it does get going, it may be a few days late because temperatures aren't as cold as we want. But it should start about the normal times, should be safe to be traveling 1 October, maybe even the end of September. I'll head out probably around 18th, 20th of September, and gauge what the color is doing up in New Hampshire and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, okay, lets me know how things are progressing. And I think we're going to see once it does get going, it's just going to be there for quite a while, a lot longer than normal.
Which is nice.
Right,
I mean, that's
now,
really...
They're happy.
Yeah, that's good. It's sounding like it's setting up for a wonderful fall foliage season. So
should be.
So it's time to start. If you haven't made your plans, start making your plans. If you, as we've mentioned before, if you have any travels around the big Columbus Day weekend, which if you're on the West Coast, we don't really get Columbus Day as a holiday, but the East Coast gets Columbus Day as a holiday. So a lot of people are, you know, taking advantage of that 3-day weekend. So hotels, lodgings, things tend to fill up. So if there's somewhere specific you want to stay and not panic about where your bed is at night, you might want to look into at least getting your weekends set up for lodging. So things to check out. Yeah. So thanks again, Jeff, for joining us and for the update and for giving us some insight onto the Otto Road and some of the other areas north of Conway and around that area. So if you want to base yourself around there or even a little further north or on the opposite side, there's lots of options. So please check out Jeff's site, jeff-foliage.com. And we'll probably check in with Jeff again, definitely, before the season gets rolling. So thank you for your time today, Jeff.
No problem.
And if you have questions, drop them onto Jeff's website because he's always, you know, make a comment, got a lot of posts on there. So if there's things you're interested in hearing about or you don't find right away, though, his search bar is really, really useful. The new innkeeper at the Isaac Merrill House Inn in Conway, which Conway, as I've mentioned, is a great area to come for fall foliage. So, Joe, I'm going to turn it over to you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, about how you got into running an inn, a pretty big inn at that, and some history of the house. And then we'll go ahead and shout out that you've still got rooms, I noticed, I think, for fall foliage the first 2 weekends of October, which is a great time to come to Conway.
We do. Yep. So my name is Joe. I am originally from Massachusetts, about 20 minutes south of Boston, and I moved up to Conway, moved up here in, I think it was last March, so March of 2016, and I didn't move up here with the intention of buying an inn. I didn't even know about the Isaac Merrill House, and once I had come up here, I've been vacationing up here my whole life, so I was familiar with the area, but I never made it this far down Kearsarge Road, which is the road that we're located on, and we found out that the inn was for sale, and I was at the time running a small rooming house back in Mass that my dad owns, and I was working with him, and so I was dealing with, I guess, hospitality on a much different scale, more like renting rooms and that kind of thing,
right.
And we found this place, and so we kind of, just based on what we knew and what we knew of the previous owner and the building, we kind of expected it to be a little rough inside, and didn't have our hopes too high as far as if we would be able to really do it. And when we came inside, you know, the building needed work, but structurally it was good. It was a sturdy building. It's old. It was built in, I think it was 1773. So
wow. It's
been around here for, yeah, it's an old building. one of the oldest up here, but it was in good shape. I mean, it needed a lot of TLC as far as, you know, the walls needed to be replaced. We needed updating, but structurally it was, you know, a sturdy, strong building. So we ended up, purchasing it in November of 2016, and we closed it. It was kind of closed for the past 6 months. He had been renting it out to people here and there, but it wasn't really fully running for almost a year. So we kept it closed, and we did renovations. We did, I mean, just to mention a few, we tore down the entire, it's got a big 30-foot on one side and 40 foot on the other side.
Yeah,
wrap around
porch. Is beautiful.
Yeah, and it was a nice porch, but I think it was as old as the building. It looked like it had been there since the 18th century. You know, it was ancient. So we didn't plan the whole story of the inn is nothing. We didn't plan to do as much as we did when we bought it. So the porch was one example. We thought we could just fix it up, you know, toughen it up underneath and the more we got into, you know, working on it, the more we realized we needed to just tear the whole thing down. So we did, and we rebuilt it. And that, in my opinion, that was the biggest thing we did as far as visually, structurally, just aesthetically. It makes the whole building, it changes the whole look of the building. And that's a really big part of the end, is that huge wraparound porch. So that was a big update we did. And from there, inside, our goal was to try and hit the common areas, because the rooms looked great. I mean,
the rooms weren't bad, because I actually stayed there, I believe, not too long in the fall, like maybe 2 years ago. So yeah, that last fall, maybe, that they were still had quite a few guests. And the room, I mean, the bathrooms were modern, so that part, they were, you know, the rooms were comfortable.
Yeah, and so I figured it's easier to close a room when need be to renovate, you know, just isolate that one room and fix it, as opposed to having to renovate common areas while we were open. So I figured while we're closed, we did the porch, we did the living room, we did any carpet in the building, we replaced all the carpet, we painted almost all the walls of all the common areas, hallways, we did all new lighting. The dining room was next to the porch. That was probably the second biggest thing we did. And that room basically was torn apart completely, with the exception of the floor. We left the original hardwood floor, and we did all new walls, new fireplace. We did a brand new built-in breakfast bar. We ended up actually, yeah, that's a nice, you know, that's one of the, people love the dining room of the inn. I mean, that's one of the you know, the top places to be in the inn. I mean, people love that big fireplace area, and we have a couple couches there. That room in particular was showing its age more than others. That actually, the floor, I don't know if you remember when you were there, but the floor of that room dipped down.
Yeah, I mean, kind of had a slope.
Like 8 inches.
yeah,
and it was, you know, these old buildings, they all have kind of a slope to them, and that's, you know, typically that's fine. It's just kind of what you get in a building that's 250 years old. But this room in particular was so bad, and they ended up, the carpenters that came in and helped us out, they ended up jacking the building up, and they raised the floor, I think it was about 8 inches.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So there was a lot of stuff done. So this room is beautiful, you know, all the common areas. And one of the biggest thing, aside from physical renovations, is the way the inn was run before. I mean, everyone that stayed here had a different experience, but from what I could tell, it wasn't run very well. The owner was never on site. You know, he was down in Boston. He would have people running it, but people didn't stay here at night. They'd have there'd be a new housekeeper 1 year, the next year there'd be somebody else. And I think part of the reason that people like bed and breakfast is you want to feel like you're staying in someone's home. And if it's run like a, you know, like a big chain hotel, but with the age of a